South American, citizenship unknown, real name unknown, age unknown. Believed to live in Mexico, believed to own pawn shops in 5 United States cities, suspected narcotics trafficker, suspected involvement in prostitution. Nice guy. No arrest record. Nothing in Mexico either. Is that it? The federal databases will have more, but I can't access them. Reacher picked up the phone again and then put it back. Rock Creek had more on its plate than his trivial business. He wondered if he was becoming an embarrassment or a bore, like the grizzled old non-coms who still lived close to army posts and sat in grunt bars all night full of piss and wind and out-of-date bullshit and nonsense. Or like retired city cops, the ones who hadn't saved enough to move south, still patronizing the same old saloons and butting in on every conversation. Peterson said, "We could go up to the prison. It's in the federal system. They've got computers. I know some of the guys there." 5 minutes to 5 in the afternoon. 11 hours to go. Chapter 28. The prison was 5 miles due north at the end of a continuation of the same road that led up to town from the highway. The road was straight, as if a planner had laid a ruler on a map. It was plowed and salted and pretty much clear from constant use. Visiting day, the shuttle buses had been busy. The 5 miles took 8 minutes. For the first 7, Reacher saw nothing ahead except a late gloomy sky and ice in the air. Then he saw the prison. There was a diffuse glow on the far horizon that resolved itself into hundreds of separate puffballs of blue-white light high above a glittering razor-wire fence. The fence was long and maybe 12 feet tall, maybe 12 feet thick. It had inner and outer screens of taut wire. The space in between was piled high with loose coils. More loose coils were fixed along the top. They were moving and swaying in the wind, flashing and winking in the light. The light came from stadium fixtures on tall poles set every 30 feet. Huge, upside-down metal bowls in groups of 4, with powerful bulbs in them. There were watchtowers set every 100 feet, tall, splay-legged structures with lit-up, glassed-in cabins and outside walkways. There were searchlights on the walkways. The lights on the poles were blazing, and their glow came back up off the undisturbed snow, seemingly twice as bright. Behind the fence was a 300-yard expanse of lit-up, snow-covered yard, and then, huddled in the center of the giant rectangle, was a cluster of new concrete buildings. They covered an area the size of a large village, or a small town. The buildings were all lit up, inside and out. They had small, mean windows in heavy blank facades, like the portholes in the side of a ship. Their roofs were all covered with snow, like a thick uniform blanket. "The gift horse," Peterson said. "Our cash cow." "Impressive," Reacher said. And it was. As a whole, the place was huge, many hundreds of acres. The vast pool of bright light set against the prairie darkness made it look like an alien spacecraft, just hovering there, unsure whether to land or to whisk away again to a more hospitable location. At its far end, the road broadened out into a wide square plaza in front of the main gate. The plaza was lined at its edges with bus benches and trash cans. Peterson drove straight through it. The gate was really a tunnel, walled and roofed with wire, tall enough for prison buses, wide enough to form 2 separated lanes, one in, one out. Each lane had 3 gates, forming 2 pens. Peterson drove into the first and was momentarily locked in, a closed gate behind him, a closed gate ahead. A guard in cold weather gear came out of a door, looked them over, stepped back inside, and the gate ahead opened. Peterson rolled forward 30 feet. The whole procedure was repeated. Then the last gate opened, and Peterson drove out and headed for the buildings on a thoroughfare that was both rutted by vehicles and beaten flat by footsteps. Clearly, the shuttle buses discharged their passengers outside the gate. Reacher pictured the woman and the child he had seen at the coffee shop, wrapped in their borrowed motel comforters, trudging through the snow, trudging back. Peterson parked as close to the visitor door as he could get. Behind the door was an empty lobby, sad and institutional, with wet linoleum on the floor and mint green paint on the walls and fluorescent tubes on the ceiling. There was an idle X-ray belt and a metal detector hoop and three prison guards standing around and not doing much of anything. Peterson knew them. They knew him. A minute later, he and Reacher had been hustled through a side door into a ready room. New construction, but it was already a little trashed and battered. It was hot. It smelled of old coffee and new sweat and wet wool coats and cheap polyester uniforms. There were five low chairs in it and a desk with a computer on it. A guard fired it up and typed in a password and then left the room. "Federal prison, federal databases," Peterson said. Those databases were evidently a little unfamiliar to him, because it took a whole lot of pointing and clicking and typing before he got anywhere. A whole lot of pursed lips and sudden inhalations and exhalations. But eventually he took his hands off the keyboard and sat back to read. "Same stuff at first," he said. "South American, exact origins unknown, real identity unknown, exact age unknown, but believed to be in his 40s, believed to live in Mexico, pawn shops in Chicago, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Des Moines, and Indianapolis, suspected dope in the same five cities, suspected prostitution in the same five cities." Reacher asked, "Anything new?" "We didn't have the names of those cities before." "Apart from that, nothing proven. There's a standard warning about how tough he is. He made it to the top tier, and you don't do that by being a choir boy. They figure he must have killed hundreds of people. That seems to be an entry-level requirement. Des Moines doesn't impress anybody, but Chicago surely does. He's not an amateur." Then Peterson started clicking and scrolling again. "More pursed lips, more deliberate breathing," he said. "The guy owns his own plane."
"So do plenty of people."
"It's a Boeing 737. A regular airliner, converted for private use, supposedly purchased from a bankrupt Mexican airline." Reacher said nothing. Peterson clicked and scrolled.
"He's very small. 4 feet 11 inches?
"Really? What are you?"
6 feet 5.
"You've got 18 inches on him. That's a foot and a half."
Reacher said, "He's practically a dwarf."
Peterson said, "Someone else once called him a dwarf and woke up in the hospital with his legs cut off."